Hello, Bill.
Good morning, Matt.
Welcome to the DMZ, everybody.
We are in the aftermath of the purge, the day after. The dust is settled. Tell me, Matt. Are you in love with Liz Cheney?
There's a fine line between love and lust, and it's hard sometimes for me to tell. We'll call it a crush.
But I think you've been looking for your hero.
She has, in the last 6 months, let's say, she has been that hero, Bill. Say what you will about the past, but in the last 6 months, Liz Cheney has been a baller.
And is there anything about Liz Cheney's conservatism or hawkishness? Sure, you're not quite the uber hawk, I think, that Cheney is.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I'm hawkish, but not as hawkish as Liz Cheney.
But you would feel at home in a Liz Cheney run Republican Party.
Well, I mean, so first of all, I think just in terms of like decency, sanity, character, yes, obviously more so than today. And also, I mean, yeah, I think she's clearly within the bounds of what we used to think of as mainstream conservative. You know, the mainstream conservative spectrum.
I mean, she's a Ronald Reagan conservative, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
So, we talked last week about whether she might be playing a long game here. I actually wrote a piece along those lines for the monthly that went up yesterday. Basically laying out, look, you look at the data, being an anti-Trump Republican, there's no hope for you. As things are currently situated in the Republican Party, vast majority of Republicans are with Trump. The majority believe the election was stolen. I think Jeff Greenfield in Politico had a piece saying that there's no civil war here. Like, you lost, they won. But I do think there is an argument that what's true today might not be true tomorrow.
Yes. The question is how long the game is.
I mean,
people talk about the long game. I always feel like as someone who, believes, in eternity, my long game is even longer than like Mitch McConnell's, you know what I mean? I think that Liz Cheney, who's still pretty young, is playing, to the degree that this is a strategic decision. And I think there are elements of that. Her time horizon is a little bit broader than others.
I mean, I think events have to occur for Cheney to have a moment to seize. But just to play out a hypothetical, I wrote another piece in the monthly that Democrats have a path to keeping the House in 2022. History suggests otherwise at first blush, because usually the president's party loses seats, usually loses a fair amount of seats, and the margin is so narrow that under normal circumstances, you would just write the whole thing off for the Democrats. The difference today is that the few times where the president's party gained or lost, very, very, very few, were in times of crisis, where the president's party was seen as doing the right thing in crisis. And that could be where we are today with Biden's handling of the pandemic. Not that it's a guarantee, but it's a possibility. And if you layer on top of that, Republicans in their own circular firing squad, that perhaps creates a dynamic where Democratic base is juiced, Republican base is dampened, which is the opposite of a normal midterm. So if Republicans lost the presidency twice before Trump, lost the House, the Senate, and the presidency after Trump or with Trump, and then continue to lose. You lose a midterm that you were expected to win. Maybe Biden gets reelected or Kamala gets elected in 2024. At what point do the Republicans say, this is not working? As much as I love this Trump guy, this is not working.
Well, look, I mean, my philosophy is always to just do the right thing as you see it and then figure out how to make that work strategically as best you can. But let's assume, I mean, even if she was just being Machiavellian here, it's not a horrible bet. So being in Congress is not the end-all and be-all of human existence. Even if she can't get elected in Wyoming, she's going to be fine. She's going to arguably be a bigger star, having done what she did. She'll be relevant. She's going to be fine. If her ultimate goal is to make a bet on the big prize, being the president, I think we could assume she's got 20 to 25 years to make that happen. And so then the question is, we're at this inflection point. Within the next 20 or 25 years, what are the odds that at some point the world is going to shift and the Republican Party will become anti-Trump or will change its tune about Trump, just like they did about George W. Bush? I'd say the odds are pretty good, right? And so think of it this way. If Donald Trump remains the bee's knees and stays super popular with Republicans, Liz Cheney would still be fighting with, I don't know, 20 other Republicans who are going to try to be more Trumpy than her. But let's say there's maybe a 50-50 chance that sometime in the next couple dozen years, there's a backlash. Liz Cheney has that niche. She owns that lane right now. So I think that this is not a crazy idea for someone who actually is trying to carve out a possible lane to the presidency in the long game.
Let me ask you this. I think this is underexplored. I touched upon in my piece, but I didn't go deep into it. Because I think this is not just about Trump, but Trumpism. Liz Cheney, is a hawk's hawk. Donald Trump is an America firster. Cheney has always been critical of Trump's foreign policy. Maybe not in a deafening manner, but she has spoken up in the past. She did not care for Trump's closeness with Putin. She does not care for withdrawing troops from Afghanistan. I mean, Biden's getting a criticism now, but she was never on board with that. When Trump was someone who wanted to pull troops out of these places. So, we might reach a point where Trump is more discredited amongst Republicans. And also, Trump's going to die at some point. He's not going to be on this earth forever. But does Trumpism remain? Even if Republicans lose the House in 2022 and lose the presidency in 2024, and Trump is not as widely embraced, are there elements of Trumpism that are still going to have taken root in the Republican Party that would make Cheney's call for Reaganite hawkishness, Dick Cheneyite hawkishness, to reemerge? And how much does this depend on what happens with Biden? How does Biden's foreign policy go? I mean, if again troop withdrawal works out fine, then Cheney's got less of a leg to stand on. If there is a blowback and there's more an uptick of terrorism, then maybe Cheney's got a better argument there. I'm curious what you think about what's happening on the ground with the Republican Party. If there is a latent appetite for what Cheney is selling.
There's an appetite for destruction, Bill. Not yet. But we still wonder, how long do political movements go? The Reagan Revolution sort of lasted from 1980 till 2016. It's a long run. I guess in the wake of Mondale and Dukakis losing, the kind of Bill Clinton era lasted from 92 till 2008, maybe. We're five, six years into the Trump era, depending on how you calculate it, when he started running, when he came down the escalator or whatever. How long does it go? I mean, if you're making a short-term bet, I think it's pretty likely it goes for another 5 or 10 years. Does it go for 20 or 25 years? I don't know about that. I suspect that if you're pessimistic, then you think this is the new normal, indefinitely. But I guess we just don't know how the future is going to play out. And again, if Chaney, again, so I'm hoping that she's making this principled, character-based decision. But if this were a political bet, I think there's a reasonable chance that in the next 20 years or so, that there will be a backlash against Trump and that Republicans will kind of be ashamed and embarrassed that they supported some of the things that they're supporting now.
I think we, at minimum, we should be looking at Cheney's actions through that foreign policy lens. And I see some, there's a bit of a split on the Democratic side whether we should be lauding Cheney for doing the right thing. I may disagree with her on 99% of stuff, but she's doing the right thing for democracy here. Or,
But I don't think this is about foreign policy. I mean, Cheney's a lot more hawkish than Trump, who, although obviously he has espoused this America First philosophy, is actually kind of capricious and mercurial. It's hard to really pin down what Trump actually believes in. But
Well, I agree that Trump is.
the schism, but the schism with Liz Cheney was not brought on by her disagreeing with Trump over Afghanistan or
No,
Syria. I mean,
I agree with
it's
that,
about the election.
but I think Cheney's deeper motivation is trying to restore a Republican Party that is traditionally hawkish. I mean, I agree with you that Trump is ideologically inconsistent, and he is isolationist in certain areas, and he's whatever Obama did, I'll do the opposite. So it depends on what the specific issue is. But he has definitely warped Republican principles on foreign policy. They're not as consistent. They're not even seen as the National Security Party anymore.
Sure.
And I think
No, I
the
think
reason
that's
why
true.
Cheney is willing to take things this far is that she wants to get that back. And so to
No, I think you're extra. I think that you have injected Bill Scherer's take on this, but Liz Cheney didn't break with Trump. Like, she didn't leave the party or get kicked out or get into a huge fight with him over foreign policy. It was over the big lie. That's where she took her stand. And I think she's sincere about that. I think that it's about things like the rule of law, and democracy. And if she only cared about being a hawk, then the easy thing to do would be don't criticize Trump for spreading the big lie. Go after Biden. Just pretend that Trump did. Pretend that Trump never cut a deal with the Taliban. Just attack Biden over being weak-kneed, and losing, Afghanistan or whatever. Like, she's not doing that.
But I don't think you can separate it because she I agree with you that she didn't escalate the schism earlier when she could have over these issues. But she was probably thinking along the lines of the Lindsey Grahams of the world, which is we just got to wait this guy out. We got to wait him out. We got to accept he's got a hold in our party. If we want to stay in power, we got to pander to the masses. And if we do that, we'll maintain our role and our influence, and we can steer them in that direction. And I think she got to a point where she recognized that wasn't going to work. He's not going away. He's not. He could even be this part of the standard bearer again in 2024. And a bigger move has to happen if we're going to save this party from becoming, a shell of a party without principle, a pathetic authoritarian cult of personality.
I mean, I think that's a reasonable and logical conclusion that I think everyone should have come to. Others haven't. I mean, at least Stefanik is basically in agreement with Liz Cheney on foreign policy, but she's obviously taking a different path.
And just to circle back to what I was trying to get to before, so Adam Serwer at The Atlantic has a piece where he's trying to push back on those on the Democratic side who are saying nice things about Cheney. He was like, "Dude, don't praise this person. This person was saying scurrilous things about Obama and the Democrats during the war on terror, trying to suggest that they were soft on terrorism, not patriotic, working on behalf of the terrorists." And that demagoguery and demonization, it led us to Trump. It is on the same continuum. She built this monster, And so she deserves no cookies
Bill, people
today.
say the same thing about me. I get the same criticism.
Perhaps Adam Sawyer would say that about you.
He probably has. I'm just not as important as Liz Cheney.
but I don't, and to the extent that that has some legitimacy, that, demonizing Democrats in one space allows, it makes it easier to demonize them further, I think obscures that there is this bona fide schism on foreign policy between the two, which I think makes it very difficult for Democrats to link arms with Liz Cheney. I don't think Liz Cheney wants to link arms with Democrats.
No, I agree. That's why I think she's like me, because I don't want to either. I mean, there's a reason that we're different philosophies, different parties. I mean, we have profound differences of opinion, but we can agree on liberal democracy. We can agree on the rule of law. And I think that in that regard, should be applauding Liz
I mean,
Cheney.
I would certainly applaud her, to that extent. But I think you have to recognize what is her long game. Her long game is, not just out of sync with Democrats. I think it's in direct opposition. She does not want Democrats to be in charge. She does not want Democrats to run
Yeah,
foreign
that's, but
policy.
see, why should there be any other expectation? Like, going against Trump and Trumpism does not, if you're the kind of person, and there are people like this, which will remain nameless, who were ostensibly conservatives, who then went against Trump, and now they're like just progressives, I just have to question like what you really believed in to begin with, or how solid that foundation was. I don't think there should be any expectation that Liz Cheney all of a sudden should change her worldview and her deeply held convictions just because of Donald Trump. But I think we ought to applaud her for being brave and tough and going against her own side, which I don't know if there had been a Trump of the left. I don't know that all. I don't think every Democrat would have bravely stood against that when it was unpopular. Some would, some wouldn't have.
Well,
And it's hard to tell who, too.
I won't go down the hypothetical path with you without having, any, evidence to go on. But we have this development where 100 plus Republicans say they're going to have their organization. They might turn into a third party. And I think what Liz, and Liz Cheney could well hook up with that group and maybe try to steer that group. And this raises questions for Democrats how to interact with that, because if what they are doing is peeling off Liz Cheney Reaganite conservatives, for Democrats, that's great. Split the Republican Party. That helps Democrats win elections in the short run. If these are the William Welds, if these are the Lincoln Project people, who already left the Republican Party in everything but name, who already voted for Joe Biden and Democrats in 2020, if you create your own organization that runs its own candidates, that's going to take from Democrats,
Sure.
not Republicans. So.
Fair game. Fair game. They could compete for our votes if they wanted them. This is the free market, and Democrats, if they want my vote, they can compete for it. And the same with Republicans. And I'm not like one of these people who gets, I'm not like an entrepreneur. I'm not entrepreneurial in the Bill Kristol sense of like building parties and organizations and all that. More power to them though. And if they present the best nominee in 2024, I will vote for that person.
But wouldn't it concern, even though, you're not a Democrat, you don't want Democrats to run the show, but I think it
Well, I don't
would.
have. I mean, I can only spend so many trillions of dollars, Bill. I only got four or five.
But you'll take the checks. You're not sending the checks back, are you?
I am cashing the checks as fast as they could send them. I'll give you my if you
That's
have a
what
direct
you should
line.
start the movement of people who send their checks back.
That's not my bag, man. It's not my bag.
But I don't think either you or perhaps Liz Cheney wants a situation where you split the Democrats and you bring Trump back into power.
Well, I'm actually concerned about this, even aside from a third party, you know, I feel like, not to harp on the spending, but Biden can mess this thing up, man, with inflation and the job. Did you see the jobs report last week after
Sure.
we taped? It's like we're only off by 1 million jobs, you know, and you know, legitimate questions over whether the $300 a month, in addition to what you were already getting, might be making it less likely people were re-entering the job market. So I'm generally concerned that Biden could just mess this thing up so bad, the economy, that Trump would get back in as the nominee. That's a legitimate concern.
Well, to go back to what I was saying about the Democratic prospects in 2022 because of crisis, the thing about crises is that they're volatile. They don't go in a straight line. So, yes, crisis gives Democrats opportunity, but there's all sorts of things that can happen along the way which can complicate matters. We don't know how well the job market's going to go, how inflation's going to go, and managing that is not so simple. So you went, there's a really good Washington Post piece that came out a few days ago about how the whole pandemic is creating an upheaval in the job market, not just because of this unemployment issue, which and look, I think the bonus unemployment amount is going to expire. I don't think Democrats will have the votes to extend it past
Wait, when does
September.
it? Is it like
I think
September or
it's
something?
September, and
Okay,
I
that's
think.
a long, dude, that's a lot of bad jobs reports from now.
But it's still plenty of time before 2022.
And, you know, I just saw that Randy Weingarten is now saying people should go back to school. Who knows what that actually means, but that's a key component. If you want people to go back to work, you need to send kids back to school.
Yeah, but no, but.
Biden should have been on top of that. Biden should have been standing up to the teachers' unions months ago, and I bet you the jobs report would have been better if kids would have been back in school.
Look, I think by the fall, kids are going to be vaccinated down to age 12, at least by the fall. I mean, obviously there'll be holdouts, of course, but you'll have more of it. Teachers will all be vaccinated by then for the most part. I don't think you're going to have a lot of school closure in the next
I
year.
hope you're right. I mean, you know, Ron Klain is going around saying that like 60 or 70% of schools are open or something like that. But what he doesn't tell you, like, yeah, but they're open one day a week and teachers aren't actually there in some of these schools. It's teachers' assistants or, you know, we need them actually. If you say open, it needs to mean open.
I mean, I know where I am. The schools are open. I think the high school is. I don't know if they reopen yet or not. The high school, the elementary, the middle schools are. I think the high school's around the corner. There's remote. You can opt out, but there's no more hybrid. And that's happening more and more. And I think by the fall, we're going to largely
As
be
of
there.
when did this go into effect?
April, early April was elementary. Late April was middle school. And I think high school is soon. Of course, the school year is almost done.
Yes.
But yeah, I think by the fall, we're largely going to be back to normal with it. I mean, there might still be social distancing elements within the schools. But the work issue is more complicated because it appears you have a class of people reevaluating what they want out of work. So
Yes.
there's this more. Quantitative, is my unemployment benefit enough that I don't need to go back to work right away? But that will expire. That will end. There's this broader question: what do I want out of my work? Maybe I don't want the job you're offering me. Maybe it's not giving you enough home flexibility. Maybe it's not giving you enough vacation time. Maybe it's not. Maybe there's things I can do entrepreneurially that I'd rather do. I mean, obviously, not everybody's in that luxurious position where they can make those choices. But if enough are, that puts pressure on the labor market, that puts pressure on employers to make their jobs more appealing,
Right.
and they're whining about it because they're
Well,
not
wait a
used to
second. Wait
having
a
to
second.
cater to the workforce.
Just like I'll take your welfare check you want to send me, and cash it, I will also not work a crappy job. However, at the macro level, so I'm not an economist, but if people decide they just don't want to work jobs, and if that forces businesses to pay them more money, I suspect that that will be passed along to consumers, and that will cause the price of products and goods to increase. Some may call that inflation. Like, wouldn't driving up the price of labor result in driving up the price of goods and all that stuff?
I mean, I think it can. I don't know if it's a guarantee that it will in this circumstance with it, because there are other factors involved, and I'm not the economist here, so I'm not, don't look to me to make those predictions. My point is, though, there is uncertainty and volatility about what the job market is going to do going forward, because we're in an unusual circumstance, and Biden can't totally control it. Now, if you have inflationary pressures that are building up because of those things, there's things that the Fed can do, and they might affect your fiscal policy decisions. But Biden can't literally micromanage how
Right.
people's attitudes about work are
But
going to go.
one gets the sense that Biden has made some decisions along the way. And by the way, let me just say, the $300 a month was not a Biden decision, right? That was initially a Trump era policy,
But the
okay?
extension of it.
Right. But I don't want to put all the blame on Biden, but Biden has made decisions along the way which seem to me have created problems in the job market and also inflation, and that at some point this could spiral out of control and he loses control of it. And if that happens, Bill, I mean, people are going to say, you know what? The economy was pretty good before COVID. Maybe Trump could fix that. Maybe Trump could get it back to the way it was before
I
COVID.
mean, obviously, that's what he would say,
Right. And some people would believe it.
and if we do have runaway inflation, that's obviously bad for Biden, whether it helps Trump or some other Republican, that would be a problem. What you're hearing from the Biden White House and from people in the Fed is you should expect some short-term temporary inflation. But we have the tools to ensure that it's contained and does not become runaway inflation.
Okay, let me just make this point. Bill, you and I, and we could pull up the tapes, we have been warning about the possibility of inflation for 3 or 4 months on this program. And as you and I,
I mean, don't rope me into this.
no, I think you are part of this. You were saying, like, you weren't predict you and I correct me if I'm wrong. I think you and I have both been saying that this is a
Well, I mean,
possibility.
it is possible. I haven't been a worrywart about it, but I've acknowledged it's a
No, I don't.
possibility.
But my point is, my recollection is that the so-called experts were saying, don't worry, not a problem. This is not going to happen. This is something that used to happen in the 70s. It doesn't happen anymore. Okay, I'll take you out of it. I have been saying, well, I'm not so sure. Like, how much. If we just keep printing money and we just keep spending money, at some point, does something happen? Is there some negative externalities that come from that? And one of them could be inflation. And now they're saying, well, this is to be ex this is all to be expected, but we ex this will be a short term. But they were my recollection is that they were completely poo-pooing the idea. And there are people more prominent than you and I. Who were saying the same thing and who were being laughed at back then too.
I don't think they're moving the goalpost. I think they were saying in the first place that even if some inflation occurred, they could manage it, that the Fed has the tools. I don't think they've just
Isn't the
suddenly
tool
said that
lower interest
now.
rates?
What's
Isn't
that?
the one isn't the
Yeah.
one tool they have?
Well, that's
How
right.
can I mean, aren't interest rates pretty low?
What's well, well, that's where you it'd be worse if they were already high. That would mean that they lacked extra juice to contain it. The fact that they're low now is good, so they can bump it, they have room to bump it up if need be. And what happened with Carter is they eventually, jacked interest rates way high, which was stern medicine and didn't help Carter in the short run, because no one likes high interest rates, but it was the medicine that was needed, and it got interest rates back down.
So
The question
this is Volcker,
it was
right?
Volcker, that's right.
He made Volcker FEC chairman.
Fed chairman.
Reagan kept him on, and that theoretically the recession goes until what, 82,
right?
Turns around just in time for
right.
49 states.
So the question now is the Fed more on top of things and can make more modest increases in interest rates to contain it, so it's not as stiff and painful and doesn't hurt Biden in the short run? Not that the Fed is thinking about Biden's fortunes, but they are saying they have the tools to contain it, and we'll see if it does crop up, if they will act swiftly enough and sufficiently enough that it doesn't become runaway inflation. And we just haven't seen the Fed have to make these kind of calls in a long time, because they've kept rates so low for so long.
It's been a decade, right?
Right. And inflation's not been a big problem for so long. So I just think you want to be a little careful not to say you got 1 month of inflation, you go, aha, it's all over for Biden, because we don't know if the Fed is going to respond swiftly and sufficiently enough.
Well, I guess we've wrapped that up into a nice little bow.
but to the broader point is there's a lot of uncertainty here. A lot of things that are not in Biden's full control. You know, he can't control worker attitudes. He can't control where the Fed sets interest rates. I mean, he can weigh in, he can speak up, but he doesn't literally have the power. He has the power to not reappoint Jerome Powell, but even the progressives have been saying, hey, this guy's doing a good job, don't get rid of this guy. He is in sync with what you want, so don't give him a hard time. I don't think Biden's thinking about replacing him. How Biden comes out of all this is hard to predict, because crises are inherently volatile situations.
So I want to go back real quick to the Liz Cheney thing, because it's not 100% clear that Elise Stefanik is going to replace Liz Cheney. There are people like Chip Roy and Ken Buck and others. And by the way, my wife is a consultant for Ken Buck.
Ken Buck, who praised Liz Cheney.
Yeah, and also I guess she worked with Chip Roy when he was Ted Cruz's chief of staff. So whatever the case may be, there are prominent people in, I guess you would say, like the Freedom Caucus wing of the Republican Party who, like, Elise Stefanik is not that conservative.
Voting record wise.
Her voting record is, but what does conservative mean? I mean, she's Trumpy, but she is not, according to, I don't know, the American Conservative Union or Heritage Action or the Club for Growth or whoever, the people who do these scorecards.
The biggest Cheney thing voted, is that she voted against the Trump's tax bill. She didn't like the salt cap, which hurt the Northeast. You couldn't deduct all your state and local taxes anymore. And so she made a big stink about that and voted against it. That's the biggest transgression from what I understand.
Well, that may be the biggest. I don't know. I mean, when they score these things, how many points that's worth? Because I think that Liz Cheney, just a dramatically higher scorecard than Stefanik. So I just think in general, maybe that's the most important vote, but Stefanik is sort of like a moderate Republican.
Has been. Whether she would still be, I think, is up for question, but she has been more of a Northeast moderate Republican.
Well, I think it's a matter of semantics here. Like, moderate, philosophically, she's not conservative. But if the new definition of conservative is Trump and MAGA, and if it's impossible to be a radical Trumper and be called a moderate, which those things seem to be opposites, then at some point the words become, you know, it's a semantics game. But whatever the case may be, she is not a, I mean, I think if you're betting, you would have to bet that Elise Stefanik, who is endorsed by Trump, would become the new number three in the House Republican caucus, but it's not a foregone conclusion.
And it's relevant because is this party a conservative party or a Trump party?
Yeah.
If you were going to replace a conservative with a relative moderate because of loyalty to Trump, that answers that question. At least in terms of the House. I've got into it with people. You know, I'll say that discussion for a little bit.
All right. Well, so Mick Mulvaney was the chief of staff, right?
Yeah.
I always get him confused with Trey Gowdy. Mick Mulvaney was on the Dispatch podcast a month or two ago, And he was talking about how Donald Trump was worried about the Freedom Caucus because their ideological purity. And Mulvaney said, like, don't worry about them because they're actually not, I mean, I'm paraphrasing here, but he was saying, like, what really animates them is not a philosophical commitment to fiscal economics, but it's being an outsider, like outsider status or maverick, like being a pain in the ass is their like motivating feature. And so that, but what's happening now is a little different. Maybe the Freedom Caucus is reexerting its self in the sense of caring about fiscal economics, or maybe it's just a matter of jealousy. Like maybe they're like, why is Elise Stefanik leapfrogging us, you know, in tenure.
One second. My cat was trying to eat a bagel.
Oh my gosh. Well, does your cat feel like the New York bagels are better?
We have Massachusetts bagels here. What are you going to do? My cats are garbage cats. They eat all sorts of junk. They'll lick the sinks. They'll eat all the scraps. It's disgusting. Anyway, I mean, it doesn't seem to me like the Freedom Caucus has the whip hand here. Chip Roy isn't even, has even decided he's going to run at this point. I know he's mused
The
about it.
last I saw, he was weighing
Yeah, I mean, come
whether.
on, how long are you going to weigh here? In or you're out. It seems like. Number one, loyal to Trump is first and foremost. Number two, they want at least a woman in their leadership. They have such diversity issues that they don't want to lose what they have. And I assume she's told everybody, look, I'm not going to go off half-cocked in the leadership. I'm not going to vote against a party priority as when I'm in leadership.
Well, she's clearly willing to do whatever it takes to get ahead.
Yeah.
I mean, ambition is driving her.
So I, not being a fly on the wall in the caucus, I assume she's going to be fine, and it's going to put a fine point on the fact that this is not a party. This is not a. It's not a House caucus, primarily animated by traditional conservative principles. I mean, whereas the other Republicans, tee off on corporations and whatnot. I mean, go over to the Senate now. I mean, you have senators actively talking about raising taxes, raising gas taxes or vehicle mileage taxes. That would never happen, 5 years ago. Everything is getting turned around right now. And I just don't think, the Club for Growth people are the ones calling the shots here.
That seems like a reasonable thing to say. I think, you know, like I said, if you're betting, you probably bet on her. But it is interesting to me that it's not just a coronation, that there is this level of dissension is noteworthy. Because there has been, I mean, that's been one of the features of the Trump era, with a couple of, you know, obvious exceptions such as Liz Cheney. I mean, it has. Remember, before Trump, you had this real schism between, you know, where people like Mitch McConnell and John Boehner were fighting off the ideological pure diehards, and that has not been a feature of the Trump era, and this is, you know, coming back a little bit, so something.
Let me bring up something a little different, related but different, about some of my, Twitter fun this week, but I think also will lead into some talk about the infrastructure bill and whatnot. So I made a comment about the 2000 election where I was saying, essentially, Bush did not win fair and square. I was responding to some other guy's tweet, I got a whole bunch of angry replies from conservatives, get over it, Bush won, Gore lost, blah blah blah. So I got 12 hours of like everyone yelling at me from the right. And then I saw a tweet from Jamelle Bouie from who writes the Times on the left, where he said that the Republicans will refuse to certify the next Democratic victory. And I thought to myself, you know, I've been making Republicans mad all night. Let's make some Democrats mad today. And said, we should not be saying that every Republican is an insurrectionist. There were Republicans that did not go along with it in 2020. Secretaries of State, almost every Senate Republican. I didn't say this in the initial tweet, but I said afterwards, like, I mean, the thing that bothered me was the flat assertion that Republicans will refuse to certify a legitimate election. That things have gotten so bad that it's a fait accompli. And it's not just some guy on Twitter. It's the guy who writes the New York Times. He's an opinion journalist, but he's still a journalist. So I think a higher standard, you know, belongs there. It's one thing to speculate about it, one thing to be
It
worried
isn't
about
for
it,
sure,
saying
like
lots of things have happened to suggest this might occur and you should be worried about it. It's another thing to say like this will happen because I think that colors Democratic response. If you're looking at an entire party from top to bottom that is not going to accept legitimate election results, it's one thing to complain about after the fact, to literally prevent them from being certified. That informs your choices. You know, why do a bipartisan infrastructure bill? Why have a filibuster?
And that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy too, right? Because, I mean, one of the reasons that Republicans went for Trump, I think, was the sense that, Mitt Romney's, they're going to destroy Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney's not good enough. He's going to put Seamus the dog on the roof of the car, and he has a war or binders full of women. That means he has a war on women. And so let's just go with a guy who's not going to play the game at all. He's going to flip over the tables and play. And so if there is a sense that it's like a foregone conclusion that they think we're all bad, well, I think it's like a Heisenberg principle or something. Well, it's
So,
more like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
on a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are you that if Republicans controlled the House and Senate in by 2024 and Biden was reelected, that they just would not certify it?
Well, look, I'm guessing that part of Bowie's argument, I didn't read the column, I'm guessing
It
part of
was
his argument
a tweet, not a column. Maybe a column's
okay.
coming.
He probably should write a column because I think the best argument that he has is that the party is going to get rid of the heroes,
Yeah,
right? The Liz Cheneys.
that's generally the response that
Right.
I get.
So the I'm trying to think of like who were some of the heroes, right? So, I mean, Liz Cheney's gone from her leadership position, but like the Georgia Attorney General,
Secretary of State.
Secretary of State's gonna probably be gone, right?
He's got a primary.
Gabriel Sterling, I don't know if they can get rid of him easily, but they'll try. The governor of Arizona will probably face a primary. And so I don't think that you can say, or I don't think it's healthy or accurate to just say outright that like this is going to happen. But I think if you were writing a column about it, you could maybe make a softer case, like if we're not careful, this could happen because as close as we got last time, imagine 4 more years of the Republican Party basically purging any of the decent people from its ranks. And look, if Republicans, I'm going to play devil's advocate here, but like part of the problem Republicans had with stealing the election was they didn't control the House of Representatives last time. And so maybe they will next time. You know what I mean? They might. So I think you could have written like a hot take, think piece type thing. But I wouldn't have been so declarative. I would have put in some weasel words, which I think would have
Well, and
been more
just
prudent.
to plug out one of my Washington Monthly colleagues, David Atkins has a piece like that where clearly thinks it's going to happen, but he stops just a hair short of saying it is most certainly going to happen. Again, I think that's a legit column to write. But I do think people should think about your it's one thing to cast a protest vote. It's one thing to do like this nonsense audit in Arizona that everyone knows is not going to go anywhere.
Bill, wait until you find out how much bamboo's in that paper before you call it nonsense.
It's one thing to primary the people who were doing good with Secretary of State. I think like the guy in Michigan who was on the certifying board, he got forced out. But the person that replaced that guy in Michigan said that that guy did fine. He wasn't someone, or he, I'm not sure if he or she. That person didn't indicate that they would behave differently. So, I mean, what is cannot be known in advance. It's what any of these people would do when they had the actual power to at least try to overturn a legitimate election with all of the political and legal consequences that come with that. If you're for a Secretary of State to literally throw an election, you could go to jail for that. You know what I mean?
Sure. But I'm telling you, Bill, okay. I mean, again, back to devil's advocate. So I remember thinking Newt should make, I'm sorry. I remember thinking Trump should make Newt his vice president and just double down with remember the two pirate ticket idea? Newt, that's what I love about Newt. Say what you will about him, but his line about like, he said, like, I'm just not sure that Trump wants two pirates on the ticket. But in hindsight, that was super scary because if Newt had been the vice president instead of Mike Pence, I think Newt would have done it, right? And so, like, what if?
I mean, to actually do it, to truly actually do it, again, and maybe you would have. Who knows? But you are literally calling for a civil war. If you're going to literally take a bona fide legitimate election and just flat out overturn it arbitrarily, someone's going to take up arms. And maybe they're crazy enough to do it. I mean, I can't be in a
I
position
think
to
it
say,
does matter. I
but
think that
people
people.
are going to have some gut check moments if they're in that position.
I don't think you can count on people fearing consequences as the last line of defense. I think that what we saw generally were people like Raffensperger and Sterling who were conservative like Liz Cheney. But like Liz Cheney, had a deep reverence and respect for the rule of law and for liberal democracy. That was really what kept the system in line. It wasn't so. I mean, if you had
And judges too. I mean,
judges too, yeah.
so many people have to be in on the con for this to actually work. A lot
Well,
of people who are completely.
it could be one. It could be one state that determines the election too.
But
And it,
these things would go to the Supreme Court, and you might say, "Why should I trust the Amy Coney Barrett Supreme Court?" Again, I'm not saying you should count
well,
on it, that you
I would
should be
trust.
sanguine or whatever. But
I
we
would
should.
trust Amy Coney Barrett and the Supreme Court, but
Others might not.
others may not, yeah.
But say, I'm not saying we should like you can just whistle while you work and not worry about these things. I'm not saying that. But we should also remember this is a lot you're expecting people to do. That I mean, people say Raffensperger doesn't want to get bullied. You're gonna get bullied if you throw an election. Someone's gonna come by your house if you do that.
Sure, but I think that this democracy we have is so precious and fragile that it's better to take extra precaution than to just say like, oh, it'd be too hard for
I'm
them to pull this
all
off.
for precaution. I'm all for raising the alarm bells. I'm all for sketching out the scenarios. All that's fine. But
Yeah.
to just say, oh, it's going to happen. It will
Yes. No,
happen
I
because
agree.
these
I
other
agree with
things
you.
happened. I think one, you're not factoring in the gut check factor, the legal factor, the Civil War factor. You just have to think about that, number one. And number two, it's going to lead you to your choices that may not behoove you.
Yeah.
I mean, and let me bring this to infrastructure, for example. I mean, how many Democrats have said there's, and still say, there's no way, it is impossible that you could make a deal with these people. They are just, Mitch McConnell just said he is 100% for, thwarting the Biden agenda. There's no point wasting your time. Just abolish the filibuster or jam it through reconciliation or whatever you got to do. When you look at what they have said about infrastructure, including McConnell. I mean, McConnell himself, yes, he said what he said about thwarting the administration, although he then semi walked it back the next day. He said he could go as high as 800 billion.
Eight
And
hundred. Did you say 800?
he said 800.
800, right.
and Capito has said this is a first offer where we can go up from here. The things that
That's the first
Republican.
time. That's the first time you've ever pronounced her name right.
Thank you. Thank you.
You usually say
I
Capito.
know. Capito. Capito. Kamala Capito.
Well, it's because Capito hasn't done a commercial telling people how to. The comma thing really stuck with me,
just to take it, I mean, put aside the history of partisanship and obstruction and whatnot. Just put that out of sight of mind for a little bit. What all parties have actually said about this bill, Republicans have said we can do physical infrastructure, traditional infrastructure. Indications from McConnell and others that can go inside is $800 billion, and are willing to pay for it through gas tax, vehicle mileage tax, and user fees, not by touching the 2017 Trump tax bill. What Biden has said is, let's do what we can agree on. The only red line is not inaction or raising taxes on people below $400,000. So that says to me that they can and perhaps will agree on $800 billion, maybe even a little bit more, for traditional infrastructure. They don't disagree on that. Biden wants more. But there's no part of that that Biden's like, I don't want to do that. He wants to do that. There is full overlap there. The bigger sticking point is the pay for. Though Biden could semantically, say, okay, user fees are not taxes. I'll do what Republicans want here, at least in part. Because Democrats are not philosophically opposed to gas tax, vehicle mileage tax, user fees, et cetera. They have supported those things in the past. They are more comfortable politically going after corporations and the wealthy. They, I think, are worried that they'll take the political heat for that deal. So I'm not saying they would rush to accept it, but it's not implausible on its face. So you can see how the stars could align for this bill. And so if you tell yourself, this is an insurrectionist party from top to bottom. Look at what the House did. The House did that to Liz Cheney. Therefore, I should not trust the Senate. When the Senate certified the election, when only six Republicans in the Senate went the decertification route, and McConnell himself said Trump fed the mob full of lies, why should you take away that possibility off the table when you could get that bill? You could. Again, keep moving the ball forward, that you're getting stuff done for the American people, that you're restoring calm and decency to Washington, and perhaps dividing the Republican Party, making them turn on each other, that they did this deal, like trying to, obviously there's risk for the Democrats to turn against themselves, but if they could be strategic and stay unified, let the Republicans squabble further, that would put them in a great place for 2022. But it's hard to get there if you're telling yourself that there's no single individual worth talking to on the other side.
Well, you talked me into it, Bill. Let's get together.
So you would accept $800 billion for infrastructure. You that wouldn't worry you about inflation.
I think that I would. I think I would vote for that. Partly because it's a lot better than 2 or 4 trillion, but yeah, I think I would vote for that if I were in the Senate.
And I
I'd go
think
for that.
people, I don't think either side is being very good about explaining this would not be 800 billion or whatever the number is today. it would be spread out over 8, 10 years. So it's not even about creating jobs today. It's not about how it affects prices today.
Yeah.
This is a long-term bill.
My only request would be do something about the ability for cyber hacking of our gas pipelines. I would try to put in some money to deal with that.
I mean, I'm sure there's people working on that as it is. I would not be surprised if more money got put into it. I mean, that's not gonna be a
I
high
went to
price
the
tag
Sheetz.
item.
I went to the Sheetz gas station yesterday, Bill. No gas.
No gas.
No gas. And then I went back today, and you could get the 87 was the only thing they had. So
What's all you need?
it's hitting home.
What do you get? You
I told you the 70s were coming back, Bill.
do you get 93?
No, I don't. But
Who
I'm
does
just saying.
that?
I like 80s. I like the 87 myself.
I've never heard an argument for why you would need anything higher than 87.
Well, I think if you're driving a high performance car, then you would need a higher octane or something or other.
But is that actually true? I know people think that, but is it
No, I
actually
think it's
true?
true, but not for the kind of cars that I drive. You don't need the premium gasoline for those.
Anything else on your mind, Matt?
No, I think we've given the audience more than the price of admission.
Have you got a plug?
I did a cool podcast with Art Tavana, who has a book out about Guns N' Roses, looking at them both musically and just culturally, the phenomenon, and how they were kind of supplanted by Nirvana. So we had a fun discussion about that. And I've been obviously documenting the Liz Cheney affair and the Joe Biden inflation worries at the Daily Beast. So check that out as well.
I did a couple podcasts, I think last week. So there's a podcast called Politics, Politics, Politics by Justin Young. And Alexander Heffner does a show on PBS called The Open Mind and has a podcast component of that. So I did his podcast. So those are out there in the universe for your listening enjoyment. We're going to Zoom tomorrow.
I think that's the plan. We'll have to come up with a time. We've been chastised about our lunchtime Zooms being too early, so I guess we shoot for a little bit later in the day.
Yeah, I'm not. I might have to stick to lunchtime tomorrow, but
Well,
we'll talk.
we'll do what we have to do. But I think your schedule may change when school is out for
Yeah,
summer.
yeah.
So we can appease the angry mob with their pitchforks and lanterns by telling them that good times are on the way. So.
All righty. Well, I'll talk to you tomorrow in the Zoom and next week here in the DMZ.
All right, see you guys.
Right.